like we are all here, council and the judges. I want to welcome you to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is September 15th, 2021, and this is our fourth and final argument on the calendar today. Council, you may notice that there are only two judges with you today. Unfortunately, Judge Ross had to excuse himself from this argument due to a family medical situation that he had to attend to. And so he will not be participating in the argument. However, he will be participating in the case. He has read the briefs. He will be participating in the conference that we have following your oral argument today. And he will have the opportunity to watch the argument as well. The argument is being recorded for his benefit. So he apologizes that he can't be present, but in many ways, he will be present in the case. So just a few remarks before we dive into the case itself. First, I will identify the case that you're here to argue this morning. It is Michael Sirach, Relator versus Northwest Respiratory Services, LLC, Respondent, and Department of Employment and Economic Development Respondent. And the case number is A210278. As I mentioned, the oral argument is being recorded. The Zoom argument is being recorded for Judge Ross's benefit. There's an audio recording that is also being made of your argument that will be available on the court's website. You each will have 15 minutes to make your arguments. Time is being kept here on the screen. You'll be counted down. Appellant will also have an opportunity to give a 5-minute rebuttal argument after respondent's argument. We did have a little technology glitch in our last argument. Apparently, I froze. If that should happen again, mid-question, please just wave your hand or pipe up and let me know. And we will pause everything and I'll repeat whatever might need to be repeated. Finally, I would just ask that you identify yourself and the party you're representing when you begin your argument today. That concludes my remarks. I think we're ready to get started here. I will turn things over now to the attorney representing appellant. You may proceed.
I'm Terry Watkins. I represent Mr. Michael Sirach. And if it please the court, Mr. Michael Sirach took a job at Northwest Respiratory. He took that based on a very simple understanding that worked for him. Number one, he would be doing the easternmost route. He lived in Faribault at the time, and the facility was in Rochester. He understood by the agreement that was worked out, or at least understood.
I don't mean to interrupt you so soon into your argument. You said the easternmost route. I think it's the westernmost route.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure I'm clear.
Yeah, as I get older, I lose sight of directions. You're correct. Thank you. The westernmost route. He lived in Faribault at the time, and the facility, as I said, was in Rochester. The route that went to the westernmost route actually went virtually through the city of Faribault. It dealt with most of Le Sueur County, Scott County, and came back basically to Faribault, or very close. The understanding that he could keep the truck at home and that was his route allowed him to take the job. He understood that he would be going to the facility 2 times a week, and that would be simply to reload and make sure that he had the schedule on the delivery. And he worked according to that. At some point, management changed, or the Northwest may have even went through an acquisition of some sort. But in any case, at one point in January, he was brought in. He was said that they were changing the policy for him, that they would no longer allow him to keep his truck at home. We're certainly not questioning that a company has a right to keep its trucks at home. that isn't really the issue here. The issue here is simply, did he have the right to terminate based on the statute? And of that three-pronged statute, I really think the only thing we're talking about is number three, which is, would it compel an average and ordinary and reasonable person to have quit under the same circumstances? There's, I don't think, any dispute as to whether the change of him having to take the truck there every night and pick it up the next morning, that was certainly an employer-based decision. And obviously, it would have been adverse to him just strictly from a time standpoint. Now,
Mr. Watkins, with regard to that third consideration, the ULJ's findings suggest that, sure, this new circumstance was very inconvenient for him, and I think nobody would quibble with that, but it didn't rise to the type of circumstance that a person couldn't just simply hold on to until finding another job. And I'm wondering if you could address that. You know, was this enough to make somebody quit, or was this enough to make somebody unhappy enough to find a new job?
Well, I think it certainly makes somebody, depending on the person. I mean, obviously everyone's different. But I think an average reasonable person, yes, would have quit. The number of additional hours that he would have been involved in doing this job, most of them not being compensated. So instead of being gone 50 hours, he would have been gone much more than that. In fact, he would have been gone about somewhere close to 20 or 22 hours a week, more than he was going to be based on the location of the facility. And approximately 13 of those hours would never have been compensated in any way. It would have related to the commute. Also, you got to keep in mind that the commute itself would have added 500 miles a week that he was not working with. At that point, his commute was virtually zero, and he now would be driving his vehicle and commuting, quote unquote, for another 500 miles, which certainly wasn't part of the understanding. Now, when we talk about would a person look for another job, when you look at, I believe it's Krantz, his understanding was he wouldn't work weekends. And the company certainly scheduled drivers for weekends. That wasn't the issue, but he wouldn't work weekends, and he took the job under that understanding. Now, he didn't look for another job. He quit when they said, you have to start working weekends. That's to say that that's any less of an inconvenience, if we want to use the word inconvenience, I think is contrary to reality. Also, I think it's Roots versus Walmart, where we were talking about $1.75 that she was concerned that she was going to have her pay reduced by $1.75. Now, $1.75, we could say, who's going to quibble over $1.75? Why wouldn't she just work till the end? And I think the reality here is, because it is a change in the understanding, and it would have caused someone in her situation to quit. And the court accepted that and understood that. When you look at,
Mr. Watkins, it seems like the decisions, the appellate decisions, have treated commute time differently than other types of conditions, and in fact haven't treated commute time really as a condition of the employment, but as something that is personal to the employee.
Whether it's personal to the employee or whether it's a part of the way that the understanding has changed, it certainly has an effect. And I don't think that's necessarily true. If you look at Carlson versus Young America, the facility had changed. I think the facility's location moved by approximately 50 miles. The court said, 50 miles, that's a long way. It changes what she would have understand the employment to be. And
that case is really different from this case, because in that case, Deed also joined the appellant's request to reverse the ULJ. And it was a case where the company did move so that the person would have to travel from Young America into Minneapolis. And she had some medical reasons for not being able to do that. So in this case, your client took the job with this company when he lived in Faribault and the company was in Rochester. And so I think it's distinguishable, and you can disagree with me on that. The question I have is, we have your client's testimony about his understanding, and read the transcript of the hearing, his understanding of how he would go about his day-to-day work, that he could keep the truck at home, go to Rochester a couple times a week to pick up. But there, I don't see an employment contract, or and the company didn't participate, so we don't know what their understanding of his employment terms were. Can you help me with that?
Well, I think it was clear that the employee's understanding from the conversations he had with the company before he took the job were exactly what incurred afterwards. That is, that he would take the truck there two times a week, and that the truck would stay at home. That was what was formulated by him to make his decision to work there. He wouldn't have worked there without that understanding. Now, to I think quibbling over whether an understanding is a is quote in an employment contract or considered terms of employment, I think the reality is whether it's understanding or it's sitting at your terms of employment, the impact on the employee's decision to work there and to stay there means it really isn't any different. If you take the Kmart case, and I really don't recall which one that is. I think it's I think it's Hayes versus Kmart. The understanding there was the same way. She expected to have annual raises, and she expected to get a raise for a promotion. Now, there's no talk in that case that it was an employment agreement. The talk in that case is that the conceptually is no different than an employment agreement. That's what she understood. That's what the company had communicated. That's really no different in this case in terms of its impact to make the decision. And really, what an employment agreement for in the terms of employment are, when you're having your discussion, when you're being interviewed or whatnot, that is to formulate a decision whether you can work there, whether it makes sense, whether you can have the livelihood that you want, whether the work hours, the work type. That's what's brought into the decision. And that's no different than you're having an understanding with the employer while you're being interviewed and you take the job under those precedents, or whether it's a quote-unquote terms of employment. They are virtually indistinguishable. The understanding was really clear. He never would have taken that job. The difference, by changing that policy, the company certainly knew immediately, which is why they went and talked to him and why can you hang on? Can you do it? Because they knew this was completely adverse to him and was completely contrary to what allowed him to make the decision to work there in the first place. They were changing the terms that related to him. Not arguing that they certainly didn't have a right to change that policy. It's their truck. It's their company. But you have to bring it in to the impact. And I understand that, you know, you can get into, I think one of the cases, I think it's Werner, which says, well, it's really an objective criteria. Werner, even though it says that, Werner really doesn't talk about objectivity. It talks about the differential in the company moving and what it had on the commute. Their differential was 17 miles. They said that shouldn't be enough. What they were saying is, if you've already decided that you're going to commute, whatever it was, 100 or 150 miles, adding 17 to it objectively shouldn't have caused you to quit. We have a completely different situation here. His commute essentially was zero. In actuality, I think it was he drove there without paying, but not with his vehicle. He drove there without getting paid twice a week. So if you want to call that a commute, it's certainly not in his vehicle. You're talking about 12 and a half hours now of commute time where there was zero commute time in his vehicle. And you're talking about 2.5 hours of commute that he did have. So you're increasing his time, unpaid time, commute time, by 12 and a half hours, and you're increasing the effect on his vehicle on it and its personal expenses by 480 miles a week, which would, you know, at a cost factor is over $250 to $300. So you have to look at exactly what this policy change is, not whether they can make it. Would it have affected someone who was taking the job? Of course. No one would have, I'm not going to say no one, but the reasonable person doesn't take a 60-mile commute, which is the, unless they can find something that was better, et cetera, the reasonable person wouldn't have taken the job. So when you go to that, when you change it, to then come to a different conclusion about what a reasonable person can do, I think is missing the facts of what this case is really about. I think Werner is the one that's distinguishable more than anything else. That's where you have a change. I think, to be honest, I think if you look at Krantz, the one with, I think Krantz is the weekend's Krantz versus Lockster Camp. That one is, he never would have taken the job if he had to work a certain number of weekends. He took the job, and when they changed that, he quit. The court said that was understandable because of the understanding that he had when he took the job and the impact on him by changing it. I think there's a case that I never cited in any of this, and I don't think the respondent did either, but Baker versus Funny Farmer Candy is somewhat similar there. I think there she took a job. She was working days, whether, you know, for whatever reason, I don't recall, but she only agreed, I can take this job if I work days. They changed their policy to where she could work two nights. Well, okay, objectively, you might have a completely different situation. You might say, objectively, that's not so bad. The company has the right to do that, et cetera. But here, she quit, and the courts, again, supported that because it had a huge impact on her. And I apologize, the phone in the next office. So and I think that's where this, you have to look at this. You can look at it objectively, but you have to look at it objectively as to the impact on the person. And in Werner, that's really what's being looked at. The increase in 17 miles is the objective part that shouldn't have caused someone to quit. They weren't looking objectively to where his commute would have been allowable under different circumstances. And thank you. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Mr. Watkins. You'll have 5 minutes for a rebuttal as well, if you care to exercise that. And next, we will hear from respondent. You may proceed.
All right. Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Carrie Phillips, and I represent the respondent, Department of Employment and Economic Development, or DEED. First, I want to start with the argument that there was a breach of promise or a breach of terms. So the evidence here does not show that NRS promised that Relator could keep the truck at home as a permanent term of employment to which he was entitled. And there is an unpublished case that I'd like to talk about. It's called Williams versus TLC Special Transportation. And I found this after the brief, so I don't have a cite in the brief for you, unfortunately. The Westlaw site is 2011 Westlaw 3795145. And in that case, the court addressed some similar facts. The relator signed an agreement regarding use of a company van. And in exchange for being allowed to keep the van at home, he was required to do some maintenance on the van. After receiving some warnings for not doing that maintenance, the employer told him he could no longer keep the van at home and he'd have to drive to the office every day, much like the relator here. And so he quit. The court in that case found it was not a good reason caused by the employer, reasoning that there's nothing in that agreement that he signed stating that keeping the van at home was a term of his employment to which he was entitled. The court went on to say there's nothing suggesting that he received an oral promise that he would always be allowed to keep the van at home. The court then rejected the argument that the commute was a good reason caused by the employer, citing Werner. So looking at the evidence we have here about the discussions. So on pages 11 and 12 of the transcript, the relator testified that he discussed with the employer using the company van and that it was critical to him that he have the van at policy, which resulted in him having to bring it in. So we can assume that when he was hired, the policy allowed him to keep the van at home. So I don't think there's any evidence that that it was negotiated that keeping the van at home was part of an employment contract or agreement. It sounds like it was the policy that was in place at the time and that certainly benefited the relator. But then the employer changed the policy, and that caused a change in circumstances for the relator. So again, I would just say that there is no promise, like some of these breach of promise cases that a relator has been talking about. I think it's certainly, you can think of it as a term of employment, and then that kind of brings into consideration change of term cases or case law, where the employer unilaterally changes a term of the employment. And in that situation, the court then looks at whether that change was adverse and whether it would compel the average reasonable person to quit and become unemployed. There is some evidence that was not received into the record about an employment agreement, and there's a copy of the policy. And again, those didn't make it into the record. It looks like the judge didn't have them at the time of the hearing, but they're marked and kind of in the record, but they weren't received into the record the judge made. So in the event the court does not affirm, the court could remand to talk about what the policy was at the time that he was hired, what the discussion was, if anything, about whether that would change or whether that policy would always remain in place, whether there was an agreement in addition to the policy specific to the relator. But that didn't, unfortunately, that isn't part of the record. But the record that we do have, there's not any evidence that there was an agreement that this would always be the case, that he would always be able to use that or keep the van at home. It was a policy that was in place and a policy change. The policy change would not compel an average reasonable person to quit under the Werner case. And relator discussed that case a little bit about the increase of 17 miles. In that case, the court reasoned that while it's understandable that that long commute would compel Werner to quit, it was a personal reason, and it was not a compulsion by the employer. So here I think the court needs to look at this policy change kind of objectively, the policy change of requiring drivers to bring the vehicle back to the shop each night. And of course, I think employees may live different amounts, different distances away from an employer. And of course, this policy change is going to affect them in proportion to how far away they live. But I think it's safe to say that, he did have to go to the shop. I think he testified a couple times a week to reload. There was a connection to that shop.
But just to be clear, he would go to that shop in the company vehicle. So he wasn't putting those miles on his own vehicle, right?
Right. That is true. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, it really seems to me that this case is a matter of degree. I mean, 17 miles isn't too much. Is 60 too much? And I'm wondering if you could address that. I mean, what is our job here in assessing what the ULJ decided? Can we second guess the determination that, 60 isn't too much?
Well, I think 60 miles is a pretty significant commute. I know, in cases addressing what's suitable employment, the court looks at the labor market area of the applicant, and that depends on the area that they live in. I know Faribault, driving from Faribault to Rochester, is that too much? It might be if there wasn't the Werner case. And so we're relying pretty heavily on the Werner case to say that the court needs to look at this policy change as it relates to an average reasonable person without regard to this applicant's personal circumstance of living 60 miles away from the employer. And he did accept that job, knowing, believing that he could keep the van at his house. But there was a policy in place about that. And again, we don't know what the discussions were about, if that policy would remain or not, but policies are subject to change. I don't believe there was a promise that he, specific to him, that he could keep that van at his house. But to answer your question, I mean, I do think 60 miles is a substantial, distance to drive, especially for him, but it's a personal circumstance. I think it depends also in part on where he lives, what his labor market area is. I can't argue that that is a long ways to drive. And again, we're kind of relying on Werner to say that is a personal circumstance. He chose to accept a job that was that far away, knowing he would have to perhaps drive there sometimes, knowing that perhaps the employer might change the policy. But objectively, changing a policy about where the company is going to keep the company van, that is not so adverse as to cause an average reasonable employee to quit and become unemployed. It's certainly inconvenient, and it's understandable that he would, start looking for other work, but it doesn't rise to that level under the Werner case. And again, I know counsel mentioned some of these breach of promises cases. There's Hayes and Lockster Camp, where the court did hold that there was a breach of promise. And again, I don't think this is a breach of a promise. It may be a change in terms of employment. I think you could classify having to drop the van off as a term of employment as opposed to a condition, in which case the court needs to analyze whether that change was adverse enough to compel an average reasonable person to quit. And that's where Werner comes into play.
I'm just wondering, so 60-mile commute, obviously, if we were in Los Angeles, that might not be such a bad commute, but we're not. We're in Faribault and Rochester. And so that's the finding of fact, undisputed. So is it a conclusion of law that that is a reasonable commute? What is, when the judge found that it's a long commute, but not a good reason to quit, is that a conclusion of law? What is that?
I think that is a conclusion of law. I think the finding that it was 60 miles away, he didn't make any findings about a labor market area, like I've been talking about. I think, analyzing whether that 60 miles would cause an average reasonable person to quit, I think is a legal question.
Or is it a mixed question?
It may be mixed. It may be mixed.
It's a skinny record.
I agree with you. It is a skinny record. And like I said, there's some documents that didn't get into the record that I wish would be in the record so that there would be that testimony about terms and about this policy and about would this policy change. So it is a thin record. And so we're arguing if the court is not inclined to affirm, the court could remand and accept or admit into evidence this letter about the terms and requirements of the employment. There's a copy of a policy. It's not clear the date of that policy, if that's the old policy, if that was the new policy. I'm assuming it was the new policy because it says that they have to bring the vehicle back. So it's not clear.
Is there authority for us to remand based on the inadequacy of the record that was made before the ULJ?
Yes, I certainly think that's that that would be an appropriate order because the ULJ didn't have those documents in hand at the time of the hearing. So it wasn't a matter of reading them and rejecting the information in them. I think...
Well, theoretically, I mean, if that is the request, what would stop us from, you know, constantly remanding matters back in order to allow the creation of a better record? I mean, it that actually seems sort of contrary to my instincts anyway about an appropriate remedy in these kinds of cases. And so that's why I asked if you had, you know, a case or something to rely on in requesting a remand.
Well, it comes to mind, I just read the case at Tau versus Command Center, and that's the case that talks about terms versus conditions. And in that case, the judge held that the applicant was required to complain about a unilateral term and condition. And the court said, no, that's, they didn't need to complain, but we're going to remand for the court to look at whether this was sufficiently adverse. So I guess that's a little different because of the legal analysis was different. And here I'm kind of asking more, or I'm suggesting that that might be an appropriate remedy because of the evidence that didn't come in. So we are asking that the court affirm first and foremost, because the evidence shows here that there was no promise. There was no agreement that this would be a permanent term of employment to which he was entitled. There was the only evidence that we have in the record is that there was a discussion and that the relator let the employer know, well, this is important to me. So that's the evidence we have. We have no evidence of some kind of contractual arrangement. And then we have under Werner that the change would not compel an average reasonable employee to quit because it's based on this personal circumstance of distance and commute time. So we are asking that the court affirm. I guess in the alternative that the court is inclined to think that maybe there was an agreement about keeping the van at home as being part of an employment agreement. We do have a document that lists all the terms and requirements of the employment, and it may be helpful to develop the record in that regard. But Adita is asking that the court affirm the ULJ's decision. And I see that my time is about up. So if there aren't any other questions, I'll just conclude. All right, thank you.
Thank you. It looks like there are no other questions. So we will turn back to Mr. Watkins. Mr. Watkins, you have 5 minutes for your rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Since the respondent is putting so much heavy weight on Werner, I just want to bring up a couple of simple points, which definitely distinguishes it from anything we're talking about here in terms of the judgment methodology that needs to be put in place. Number one, Werner had a commute that was 85 miles one way, 170 a day, added 17, went to 204. The court was not saying that if you have a 170-mile commute, oh, that's reasonable. All they were saying is if you are crazy enough to have an 85-mile one-way commute, you can't complain when it's increased by 17 miles, which is less than 25% of the increase. That objectively is the objective standard that they discuss in Werner simply relates to the increase in the commute. They're not saying that anybody who's got a 102-mile commute shouldn't complain or don't come here. They were talking about if they've increased it by 17 miles and you've already agreed to an 85-mile, that's not objectively an argument you can bring before the court. The other thing is, you know, whether they have policies, whether it terms, whether they've got an employment book that's as, you know, as thick as the Bible. The point is, in Mr. Sirik's case, they agreed, they had an understanding, you can leave the truck at home. That understanding was because of his personal situations, their ability to get the West route done and actually save money on the way they were doing it, although that has no real aspect here. They understood that he could not and would not take the job otherwise. And they didn't say 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, this isn't working out. We need our truck here. This isn't a a case that in any way is comparable to the one where you've got a vehicle to drive. Oh, you're not maintaining it. Well, we're cutting this out. There's no evidence at all here that there was any reason other than the company making the decision that it was best for their assets and their procedural policies to start having all the vehicles there. Northwest Respiratory didn't attend the employment hearing. There was no way to question them. Why was the reason made? Was it made by the insurance company? Was it made by something else? We don't have that. We also don't have any testimony from them because they weren't there as to, okay, when you hired Mr. Zurich, was it very clear what the understanding was? There's no reason to think it wasn't because he continued to leave his vehicle at home. And if the policy would have been otherwise, I don't think he would have worked there that long. The reality here is that it does matter on the change of in employment based on what you agreed to do and what was a sensible decision. The decision that Mr. Zurich made was that, yes, if you can let me have the truck at home and I'm only coming here two times a week to refill, I can make this work both for me and for you. If you're going to add 20 hours to my commitment to this work, both in how long I'm commuting and in the fact that I'm starting in Rochester every single day, that's not going to work for me. When we're talking about a 60-mile commute, again, I think as was mentioned, it does matter where you're commuting from. Anyone who regularly drives from Faribault to Rochester, my office used to be in Rochester. I had court in Olmsted County. It is not a commute anybody wants. Go down Route 60, and when you finally get to 52, you're just thrilled that you're still alive. So a 60-mile commute to Rochester from Faribault is a really serious reality, and he wouldn't have taken the job. The effect on his car and everything else, it is important. It is important when you have an understanding. The understanding in Krantz, the understanding in Carson, the understanding in Baker, the understanding in Roots. These are all based on understandings they had at the time they took the employment. When those did not carry forward, they either didn't get the raise or they were told we're going to start scheduling you nights, even though you told us you couldn't, or we're going to start scheduling you weekends because everybody else gets scheduled weekends and you told us you wouldn't work here. Those were reasons to quit. And those were reasons to quit without bringing in the impact, the financial impact on any of those employees. When you then go further in this case and bring in the financial impact, I think it becomes very clear. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you both for your helpful arguments this morning, now this afternoon. The case is now submitted and we will issue our decision within the statutory timeframe.